Don't Depend on Daddy is an unfiltered safe space, empowering young professionals to build independence in their 20s and beyond, whether it be personal, professional, or financial. Regardless of your age, relationship status, or job title, the most consistent person in your life is you. So join me and let's build our independence together. Enjoy. Hello and welcome back to Don't Depend on Daddy, the podcast. My name is Michaela. I am your host and I am so excited for this week's episode. We are talking about things that have made my life better in my 20s. Before we get into it, we're going to go through all of our usual things. First thing that I want to say before we do housekeeping and the Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week is thank you all for such the positive feedback on last week's episode. So many of you messaged me saying that you really enjoyed the new format, the new content, that it did sound a lot more put together. So that means a lot to me. And I'm just really happy that you have enjoyed it so far. So we're starting the year off strong. I'm also liking these more lifestyle-esque podcast topics. Although today, because we are talking about things that have made my life better, we're going to do it across all the categories. So personal finance, career, and personal like health, wellness kind of stuff. But let's first start out with a little bit of housekeeping. So as usual, you can use the code PODCAST1 for $10 off the personal finance dashboard. We did just conclude the last sale of 2023 and it like bled into 2024 a touch. I do not anticipate that I'm going to be putting the personal finance dashboard back on sale, like big formal sale, until my birthday, which is in July. I may, and this is a big maybe, I may do a flash sale in April around the time where I celebrate my self-employment anniversary, but that will be much shorter. So use the code PODCAST1 if you don't have the personal finance dashboard and you want to get it. Next, if you have not enrolled in the planning email course, which is totally free, you definitely should. You can download the financial planning checklist and it will automatically enroll you in that quick little mini course. It's 4 days. It gives you tons of information on how to put together your best plan for 2024. I'm still in the throes of putting together my own plan. I'm actually starting my year-end review and like the formal process today in my accountability circle, or the day that this is going up. So my accountability circle program, whatever we want to call it, I still need to come up with like a real name for it, is all new. It's basically a place to help build community in a different way. So if you're somebody who struggles with accountability, or you know, you want to meet other people who are also working on their finances and you want some face time with me, come join that group today, Wednesday, the 9th, I think, or maybe it's the 10th when this is going up. I'm recording it in advance, but on this Wednesday, we're starting a 2-day like masterclass workshop inside the accountability group. We're going to go through the year-end review, and then tomorrow, Thursday, we're going to do a 2024 planning session. It's live but recorded and it will live in the group. So if you want to access that, you've got to join the group. It's all linked in the show notes. That is all. Actually, one more quick housekeeping thing. Own your money. If you haven't bought it, you totally should. And yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that because I don't want to inundate you guys with sales. I know over, if you've been following me on Instagram over the last like 8 weeks, ever since Black Friday, basically. So it hasn't been 8 weeks, like 6 weeks. I've been doing a lot of sales. I've been pushing a lot of products. I recognize that. I did get feedback on the podcast that I talk about my products too much. I don't take any other ads on here, so I'm going to talk about my products. And if I do ever get ads on this podcast or decide to take ads onto this podcast, that might look a little bit different, but I understand I've been pushing a lot of products. We're going to get back into like regularly scheduled programming going forward, especially on Instagram. But I will say that on the podcast, I am going to always mention the things that I have going on. So the personal finance dashboard, own your money, my free email course, and my accountability group, because there's always new people coming in to listen to the show. This might be the first time they're hearing it. So if you are somebody who listens every week and you want to just skip through this beginning part, housekeeping part, feel free. It's a free country. You can do that. Now, let's move on to the Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week. So this is the new segment for 2024. We kicked it off last week with one of my moments of the week, which was spending New Year's Eve alone, which if you haven't done that before in your life, I highly recommend giving it a go if you are in a position where maybe that makes sense for you. I think it's lovely and I anticipate, I mean, hopefully next year, New Year's, I have a boyfriend, but I guess we never know. We're manifesting that. We're putting it into the universe. God help me. find a boyfriend in 2024. Anyways, this don't depend on daddy moment of the week is sharing a moment of independence. So it can be anything. Remember, it doesn't have to have anything to do with your dad. This podcast is not affiliated with your dad. Also, on the topic of that, I did receive a comment of someone mentioning that the name sounds sexual. That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. I understand that daddy can have like a sexual connotation, but I don't know where the sexuality in relation to this podcast ever came from. That seems like a really weird you problem if you thought that. So obviously this has nothing to do with sex and nothing to do with your dad. I feel like that goes without saying, but if you had that connotation, like I would really do some inner work reflection on that because I've never drawn that sort of conclusion or connotation with the content of the podcast. So as a reminder, these moments in the podcast are not affiliated with your dad. The goal is to highlight moments in your life where you show up for yourself that often get overlooked. So I do have a survey in the show notes where you guys can submit your own moments of the week. I did receive one. I'm really excited. This is the first one. I got a couple, but I'm going to go and start with the first one I got. And this is the submission says, I decided to pay for a personal trainer since I was going to live at home after college, and living at home after college felt like a step back, but I decided to use the money I was saving on rent to pay a personal trainer and focus on growing in a new area of life. And I'm so happy I did it. It allowed me to still grow as a person despite living at home with my parents. I love this one because I spent a period of time in my 20s living at home with my parents during the pandemic. It was very challenging. Living at home as an adult, while it's a wonderful financial decision, really does strip your independence and your sense of self away from you in a way. I feel like in that period of time as a person, I like deeply regressed in terms of my ability to maintain myself. I think part of that was the pandemic, but also the other part of it was like my mom was cooking me dinner and I didn't have responsibilities in the same way that I did when I was living alone. So I really love this one about paying for a personal trainer, investing in yourself, investing in your well-being. That's a big theme of mine for 2024, and we'll talk about it in future podcast episodes for sure. But yeah, I loved this Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week. If you have one and you'd like to share it anonymously, of course, the survey is always going to be in the show notes. So with that, we really sped through all of the intro stuff. We're going to get into things that have made my life better throughout my 20s. As I get closer and closer to 30, I turn 30 next summer. I'm still 28 and a half, so we've got a little ways to go. But my lifestyle has begun to change a little bit, and my interests and my desires and like the things that I'm passionate about have definitely evolved since my early 20s. I've spent more time like reflecting on what my life used to look like and what my life looks like now. And it's amazing to me how different my life is now versus when I was 22. And I want this to serve as a reminder that if you're in like the early phase of your 20s, let's say pre-25, where everything seems to be really hard and maybe you can't get ahead financially because you're struggling to make ends meet and you're struggling at work or you're struggling socially and you're just navigating that weird period of time between, you know, college and adjusting as a full-time adult in real life. I want this to be a reminder that like things change and it takes time for things to change. It takes time to build a life and to not rush it. I literally look back on the years of my life pre-COVID and it feels like they didn't even happen. That's how far I've come. Yet they were some of the most transformative years of my life. I feel like I learned so much during that time. And now as a 28-year-old, I've finally figured out what I feel like is my personal formula for making my life great. And that formula always will look different for everyone. I've gotten a lot clearer on where I want to go in my life. It doesn't feel so far away and so unachievable. And each day and week and month, I genuinely feel like I am taking steps to improve my life and that I finally have control over my life. And this took years to get to. Social media makes it seem like everybody has their act together right away and that people are accomplishing everything so quickly. And this really isn't the case. And it's important to remember that life takes time and you have time to change things. And those small changes really do add up for continuous and compounding improvement. So for this episode, I'm going to be sharing the things that have made my life better across the three main pillars of life: personal finance, career, and my personal life. So the three main pillars of life that I talk about. So with that, let's just get right into it. We'll start with personal finance. So I have five things. First is opening up a high-yield savings account that has savings buckets. So a high-yield savings account, for one, really great thing to do in your 20s. Any cash savings you have, so money that's not invested in money that's not in your checking account, really should be going into a high-yield savings account. But opening a high-yield savings account that has savings buckets made my life so much easier when it came to financial organization. I used to use Capital One, and Capital One is a great account. This is no dig at Capital One whatsoever, but the Capital One high yield savings account doesn't have savings buckets. So in order to organize my goals, if I didn't want to have all of that money in one account, but really I was using it for an emergency fund and travel, and it was just like all jumbled together, in order to organize it, I had to open like three or four different accounts, which isn't a big deal, but it's not a necessary thing to do. And so I switched to Ally. And now with Ally, I have one high-yield savings account that's broken up into like four to five different savings buckets, and I can add as many buckets really as I want. I'm sure there's a limit, but I have added like three or four of them. And you can move money around between the buckets all within one account, and you can choose the bucket that you want the interest to be applied to every month. So it's really just helped a lot with financial organization. If you're like me and you like to keep your money in the space it needs to be in, like that's just how my brain works. That's how I track things in my personal finance dashboard. Having the account with savings buckets, A+. I love it. I highly recommend Ally. I have worked with them now for a year and a half. We have not re-signed my contract. I hope that we do. But if you do open an account with Ally, make sure you go to ally.com/breakyourbudget, because I don't make a kickback from that, but they do track the clicks, and that obviously helps support my page. So please do that if you're going to open with Ally. Next was investing in my living space. So living alone is one aspect of this. This is another thing. Maybe I'll do a whole podcast episode on like living alone. But living alone was an investment in myself as a person. But what I've done to take this a step further is really investing in the space that I live in. So, you know, investing in furniture that I really like, starting to decorate and making my apartment feel more homey, investing in appliances and things that just make my quality of life at home the best that they can be. Because I work from home, I spend a lot of time at home, and your environment has such a huge influence and impact on how you feel, how you show up, how you treat people. If you're unhappy at home, you'll be unhappy pretty much everywhere else. Not, you know, guaranteed, but overall, I feel like in times where my living situation has been out of whack, I've been less happy and much less good to be around, if that makes sense. So I've spent a lot of money over the last year really investing in my space between my rent and between having furniture and like decorating my home the way that I like it. So it's basically like my little oasis. It's always a work in progress. I'm still, you know, working as hard as I can to make it better. I'm working within the parameters of an apartment, but I'm accumulating furniture that I can take with me to future spaces. So my next big apartment purchase is going to be a new bed and a new mattress. I've been wanting that for a while. It's not a necessary purchase, so I've been putting it off. But again, hopefully if I find a freaking boyfriend, then I'll buy a new bed. So moving on, weekly money routines. This is a big personal finance investment for me. Or I don't even want to say investment, but like elevation is probably better. And I've been doing this for so long. For the first few years after college, I felt like I was walking into walls. When it came to my finances, I didn't know how I was spending my money. I didn't know where to put my money. And I would create a budget and then I would never look at it. Like I was just looking at my expenses in my phone, tracking them on a notes app. And once I spent money that I felt uncomfortable about, I just stopped tracking. Implementing a weekly money routine has completely changed the way that I approach my finances from like a financial management perspective, but also it's changed the way that I approach how I spend my money, how I use my money. I cannot emphasize enough how much this has impacted my overall financial progress. It's crucial. So if you are not doing a weekly money routine and you find you struggle with sticking to a budget, this is the answer. Tracking your expenses is so key. And again, it will really bring awareness to how you're using your money. You won't be able to like have things slip through the cracks in the same way. And I think you'll just feel better. It also changes your spending behavior and your financial behavior that comes through the process of self-reflection. So if you take one habit into 2024, let it be weekly money routines. Next is choosing a credit card with points that align with my interests. So when I first graduated college, like my first credit card, I think I even had it in college, or right when I like got my first job is when I think I got my first credit card because I had a salary so I could get approved for it. And this was back in 2017, so I don't know if things have changed now. But basically, I had a Discover Cashback card because that was like a no-fee card. It was an introductory card, so good for students and good for new grads. And I would get like 2 to 4% cash back on different categories, and the categories alternated and changed every single month. This was a great card, but it really wasn't doing anything for me, if that makes sense. And so over time, I slowly switched and learned more about travel cards, and I switched to travel cards. And I would say credit in the realm of personal finance, like credit is probably my weakest area in terms of knowledge. I have a very high credit score. I have an over 800 credit score. I will say that. So yay. But in terms of like understanding different credit cards and doing the analysis on optimizing credit cards and points and all that, that is not my zone of genius. I'm going to be bringing on one of my friends in a few weeks to the podcast to talk about this specifically because he is like a credit card wizard. I met with him a little while ago to talk about the episode, and like I'm just blown away by how much he knows about credit cards. He flew to Dubai in one of those like bed seats, not the lay flat seat, like the bedroom suite on the top of the plane where there's like a shower and everything. And he used points for that. And I just like, he's like a normal person. So I don't understand how that happened, but he knows and he'll explain it. So I'm really excited for that. But a long story short with this whole credit card thing is I switched to travel cards because it made more sense to me to be earning points that I can cash in for travel rewards versus just getting cash back on miscellaneous purchases. So when you're thinking about credit cards, pick a credit card that aligns with your interests and like what makes sense for your spending pattern. So if you don't do a lot of travel, maybe it doesn't make sense to have a travel card. But if you're flying a couple times a year, it does make sense because you can use those points for those flights. So now, but moving to the last personal finance one, and this was building a capsule wardrobe. So my capsule wardrobe is still a work in progress. I mentioned this in the last episode, but really my focus on my capsule wardrobe in 2024 is accessories. I've got jeans, I've got shirts, but I want to start accessorizing because I feel like accessories really elevate a look. I've been into this whole, like, I don't want to say quiet luxury, but like looking expensive side of TikTok. And a couple of my favorite creators, one that I actually saw recently was Sif Hader, and she has a podcast with Dear Media called like Wellness with something. I don't know. All those podcasts are wellness podcasts, but she did a video on TikTok about things that you can do to look more expensive. And I went down a rabbit hole of all of her videos, and she just always looks so put together and so expensive. And I'm sure she is expensive, but she really embodies that look. And that's the look that I want to go for with my capsule wardrobe. I want it to be classic. I want to elevate it a little bit. And it takes time to build up a wardrobe. And I think we don't talk about that enough. Like building up a wardrobe of clothes and staples that actually fit you between shoes, shirts, jackets, accessories, bags, all the things, it takes time. Like you can't buy all of these things at once. So this year, my focus is accessories because I feel like I've got a closet of clothes that I don't need to buy like tons of more clothes. That's not to say I won't buy any, but that's not my focus for the year. But building a capsule wardrobe, the benefit of doing this on my finances is I feel like I spend way less money on clothes and I'm able to buy nicer clothes that actually fit me properly that I wear. Whereas earlier in my 20s, I would just buy whatever was cheapest or things that were trending. I didn't have any sense of my personal style. And I just ended up throwing money away. Like I probably have thrown away thousands of dollars on clothes just because I didn't know what to buy or I wasn't investing in the pieces. So having a capsule wardrobe, well, it's an investment in the process of building it. And I feel like it's an ongoing investment. I feel like you get more bang for your buck with the money you're spending on your clothes. So I do have a whole podcast episode on building a capsule wardrobe from last like summer, spring, I think last summer. So go back and listen to that if you're curious on the process. I feel like that was one of my like really better episodes of the show. So those are my five things that made my personal finances better. Now we're going to move into things that have elevated my career and made my career better in my 20s. This is a fun one. So the first thing is creating weekly and daily to-do lists with most important tasks at the top. So I call these MITs. This is actually something I learned from an influencer named Renee Amberg from her videos like a few years ago. She used to do these planning videos and she would always map out her three MITs of the week. And I sort of translated that into my three MITs of the week, but then also my three MITs every single day. Like, what are the three most important things that must get done today? And this has made the biggest difference in terms of my productivity and feeling like I've accomplished something. This applies to corporate or if you are self-employed or freelancing, and even if you're side hustling and working a corporate job, defining your three MITs for your side hustle for the week is a really great way to balance building up a business and working a 9-to-5. So thinking about MITs and incorporating that into your daily and weekly planning is really helpful. I also want to do a quick little add-on to this is I no longer overextend my to-do list. So I don't do a super, super long to-do list every single day. I have my three MITs and then I maybe have like 3-to-5 administrative or miscellaneous tasks that don't fall within those MITs. But I no longer have like 1,000 things on my to-do list. I try to be much more realistic about what I can actually get done. And I tend to put, this is something I learned from Grace Lemire, how long it's going to take for me to get things done for each task. So I did bring Grace onto the podcast last fall, I think. Yeah, last fall. You should go listen to that episode with her if you are interested in like freelancing and time management and whatnot. Great episode. So that's number one in terms of my career. Next was keeping track of everything that I accomplish each week and each month. I did this towards the tail end of my corporate career when I felt like I was getting shafted at work and taken advantage of. And it helped so much in terms of my confidence in having important career conversations, but also in my confidence when I decided to leave my job because I had a whole freaking list of all the things that I had done, all the responsibility I had taken on. And I presented that to my manager. He was like, no, you can do this. Like, we're going to promote you at the end of the year. I have a whole episode talking about that disastrous conversation. And because I had that list and I saw everything I did and I felt like I was getting, again, overlooked and shafted on a promotion, I had the wherewithal to be like, okay, I'm out. I'm not being respected here. I have other things that I could be focusing my time on. And I'm just respectfully, politely going to move on. If you do not keep track of what you're doing on a weekly and monthly basis, you're doing yourself a disservice because you are putting yourself in a position where if somebody wants to essentially like make up a story or say that you didn't do something, you don't have the proof to be like, no, I actually did do it. Also, beyond like being able to advocate for yourself in the workplace by having a brag sheet, essentially, it also makes it a lot easier to have examples when you're interviewing to make sure you can update your resume with the most relevant work and to highlight your accomplishments, your skills, your value add. There's just so many benefits. So I definitely recommend starting to task track and incorporating task tracking into your daily and weekly workflow. So 5 minutes at the beginning of the day to like list out and review your to-do list, 5 minutes at the end of the day to write down what you did and the value add of what you did, and then 10 minutes at the end of the week to highlight 3-to-5 accomplishments from the week, keeping it all organized in one place. You can do this in a notebook. You can do this in OneNote. You can do it in a Google Doc. I do have a template, the Own Your Career template. Highly recommend you check that out. It's always linked in the show notes. Next is building up a side hustle. So surprise, your side hustle is part of your career, or an interest in a side hustle is part of your career. Just because it's not related to a corporate job does not mean it's not professional, and that does not mean that it's not part of your career journey. This one goes without saying, Break Your Budget changed my life, obviously. It literally was one of the hardest, scariest things that I did, especially at the beginning, because I felt like people in my life were judging me. I didn't want people to find it, but eventually I just got over it. I think the pandemic helped a lot because I could post online and I like didn't have to see people. And if they did find it, they couldn't come and talk to me about it because I was at home and they were at home. That being said, pushing through the like weirdness and hard part at the beginning was again, hard, but the best thing that I've ever done, because I was able to quit my job. I was able to increase my income dramatically. It completely changed the way that I approach work. It completely changed my life, my personal life. Like, building up a side hustle and starting my side hustle was the best thing I ever did. So if you've been thinking about starting a side hustle, or, you know, you're unsure, if it's weird, if people see what you're doing, whatever, push through, keep going. You've got, like, it will make a big difference. Next was leaving my corporate job at the right time. So this is a big caveat, at the right time. Obviously, leaving my corporate job was the right decision for me, but it could have been the wrong decision for me if I didn't do it at the right time. So that means that I didn't rush it. I could have quit my job realistically probably like 6 to 8 months before I actually did, but I chose to take the time to make sure that I was fully financially prepared, that I built up my business revenue so that it exceeded my take-home pay from my corporate job, so that I could make sure that I was at least at a minimum taking in on a monthly basis the same amount after tax. I was taking in more, and I think that was like me pushing it a little bit, but financially preparing, so exploring my insurance options, making sure that I understood what was going to happen when I no longer had that biweekly paycheck. I took the time to ensure that Break Your Budget had legs to stand on. And the reason why this is so important and why I'm not a proponent of like going all in on your business is because when your business from a financial standpoint isn't staying afloat and doesn't have legs to stand on and reliable income for 3 to 6 months after you leave your job, then you are then focusing your time and your energy in your business on just making your next paycheck, making your next piece of revenue, instead of focusing on longevity and growth. And it becomes like you get desperate to make money. And I don't think that that's a way to build like a rock solid, sustainable business, if that makes sense. So use your 9 to 5 to fund your side hustle, to fund your ability to build your side hustle. There is nothing wrong with doing both. And honestly, there's nothing wrong with having a 9 to 5 job. I think it's a great option for most people. But if you're trying to build a side hustle that you'd like to ultimately have become your full-time job, you really need to do it right or you'll shoot yourself in the foot. Next is keeping my business to myself. So, and I don't mean that in like a privacy way. I mean it in the sense that I haven't hired anyone and I haven't given away any equity or any stakes in my business. I don't have any outside interests and I get to control it. And ultimately, I do think when I do hire someone, it will probably be one person. And it'll be somebody who I take like extensive time to train because I'm a control freak. So the reason why this is one of the better decisions I've made is because I see a lot of like finance creators corporatize their business, and like then it becomes ingenuine, if that makes sense. And like you get to a point of growth where it's like, okay, now I'm not doing the things that made me grow in the first place, and you lose people there. And I want my business to stay in like that sweet spot of I can manage pretty much everything on my own, but I've grown to a point where, you know, it's a real business, if that makes sense. And it's a very hard balance. Not to say that like, oh, if I were to grow, I would not take that opportunity, if that makes sense, but I'm doing it in a much more calculated way. I don't want to have investors. I don't want anybody else's hands up in what I'm doing, because I feel like that defeats the purpose of like me being an entrepreneur or a solopreneur and like having control over what I do. And the last thing that made my career better in my 20s was focusing on one thing and doing it really well. So I think early in your 20s, a lot of the advice, and I'm not going to say I've never given this advice, but a lot of the advice you hear is to try everything and don't silo yourself and you can change everything and whatever. And I think that's good advice in the sense of you want to keep your options open and you want to be open to different opportunities. But if you're okay at everything, you're not good at anything. And I think that that can be stifling in your career long term. So how can you specialize in something to differentiate yourself? How can you really hone a specific skill to become invaluable? How can you be the best thing at something? So that could be, again, in a 9 to 5, it could be a certain skill, it could be a certain software, it could be a certain industry knowledge. How can you be essentially irreplaceable in the workplace? And then from a business standpoint, when it comes to monetizing and when it came to monetizing Break Your Budget, I focused on one product, the Personal Finance Dashboard, which is now the product that people associate me with. They associate my brand with that product. And I focused on doing one thing really, really well first, getting buy-in on that, proving that it's a valuable product, that people want it, that I'm invested in continuously improving it, that I'm not in it for like a cash grab, and then expanding beyond that. So, you know, I've expanded my digital product suite, obviously, but I didn't do that until I had one product that really stuck and I did it really well. And I still do it really well, I feel like. So focus on one thing, get really good at it, and then move on to the next thing. If your attention is diverted on a million different things, it's really easy to feel like you're making progress without making any progress. That's a lesson that I've learned. Okay, so now we've gone through personal finance and career. We're going to end on personal life. Most of these are health and wellness, and I have a lot of them, so bear with me here. First things first is setting an alarm to go to bed. We normalize setting alarms to wake up. Let's normalize setting alarms to go to bed. I started in the fall setting an alarm at 8:30. So this is more like an 8:30, 9 o'clock. Sometimes it's 8:30, sometimes it's 9. But I set an alarm on my phone to remind me to get into my bed. So that is basically my evening cue of like, I'm putting my phone away. My bedroom is a no phone zone, essentially. I'm putting my phone away. I'm brushing my teeth. I'm going through all of my like bedtime activities. I'm shutting down my apartment, so I'm making sure everything's put away. I'm picking up a little bit. And then I'm getting my book. I'm turning on my evening routine on my Hatch, which is we'll talk about that. And I wind down. And this has really helped me go to bed earlier. It's also helped me not scroll on my phone until 11 o'clock because I found over the summer, like spring into summer, I was in a really bad habit of taking my phone into my room and literally sitting on TikTok until 11. And then it'd be like, why can't I wake up early? Duh, because I'm not going to bed at a reasonable amount of time. If you want to go to bed, if you want to get up at 6, you got to go to bed no later than 10 or else you'll be tired. So that's why I set an alarm. It has made my evening routine so much easier. Highly recommend if you struggle with like sitting on your phone really late in the evenings, especially too in my early 20s. Like I was always a health and wellness kind of person, but I was never someone who like focused on evening habits. It was always forcing myself to get up and out of bed in the morning. So I'm a big evening habits person, and the setting a bedroom, like a bedtime alarm, has been very helpful. Next is reading. I have been in my reading era over the last year. I started reading in 2023. I found like authors and style of books that I like. So I really like Elle Kennedy. I've read some Ellen Hildebrand and I really like that. And, you know, I'm dipping my toes into fantasy right now. I'm currently reading Divine Rivals, which was a recommendation from my friend. And I'm liking it. I'm not loving it, but I'm liking it. I'm assuming it's going to get like better because everybody says it's amazing. And I think in 2023, I read maybe like 10 to 15 books, which is big for me. So this year I want to read, you know, the same, if not more, probably more. I feel like I could probably read like 2 or 3 books a month at a minimum. Some of these books, like the Elle Kennedy books, I fly through. I can get through one of those books in 3 days. So I've been reading more. It really helps, again, at night with the wind down routine in terms of getting off of my phone, especially when it's a book I really like. And I would say reading fiction books. I used to think that I wasn't a reader and it was because I was reading like really boring self-help nonfiction books. I don't want to read those. I will read them, but not at night. Like my nighttime reading is for fiction. I want to be taken into another freaking dimension and I want to read a story. Like I want to feel something about the characters. I want it to be an interesting book. I like romance books. Like I said, we're dipping my toes into the fantasy stuff and we'll see how I like it. I remember growing up, like I liked Divergent. I've read all the Harry Potter books. Like I liked those. So I feel like I do like fantasy. It's just the connotation in my head that it's like fairies and stuff, which isn't what Divine Rivals is. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'll give you guys an update on that as I get through it. But reading, I've been reading a lot, big reader, love it. It's made my life a lot better, especially at night. And especially for just like, I feel like learning and reading is a good habit to be in terms of mental stimulation. Next is a Hatch alarm clock. So And I'm sorry if you can hear beeping outside of my window. Next, it's a Hatch alarm clock. And I think this one is one of those things that people are hesitant. They're like, it's really trendy. Is it worth the hype? It's worth the hype. I bought it. Like, I will say this sincerely. Nobody sent it to me. I paid money for it. I actually bought in 2021. I bought it. And I think at the time it was like $130. I'm assuming it costs the same now, maybe a little bit more. I bought the original version. And then in the middle of last year, they sent me an email and was like, oh, yours is part of a defective batch. Like, we're going to send you a new one. And they sent me the new updated version and I love it. So I think the Hatch alarm clock is worth the hype. I've had it now for 2 years almost. I think, yeah, 2 years. And I'll never go back to using my phone alarm. Anytime I'm traveling, I always hate using my phone alarm. I went through a period where I would take it with me because I didn't want to use my phone alarm, but I feel like that's excessive. I have my evening routine where I wind down. I have it set for an hour of red light and then rain noises. And then after that, I do brown noise all night. I like having noise when I sleep. I know some people don't like that, but I like it because, you know, if there's noise outside of my apartment, it doesn't wake me up because of the brown noise. And then in the morning, I do like a sunrise. So it starts to wake me up 30 minutes before my alarm goes off. It's really helpful in the winter when it's dark in the morning if you want to get up early. And it's like much more gentle. So if you are somebody who struggles with getting up in the morning, you struggle with unwinding in the evening, a Hatch alarm clock is awesome. Definitely recommend it. And two, it will help break your phone addiction at night. Okay, the next one, this is a more recent one. So I feel like it probably doesn't deserve a spot on this list, but I'm going to say it anyways, is getting a hot water bottle, especially in the winter. If you don't have a hot water bottle and you live in a cold climate or it gets cold where you live at night, you need one of these. I mean, LA obviously isn't freezing, but it does get cold in the wintertime. What I do is I put hot water in it, obviously, and then at night I put it in my bed and it like warms up my bed while I'm doing my skincare and brushing my teeth and like picking up my apartment. And then I get into a nice warm bed and I do it in the morning too. It makes it easier to like sit at my desk in the morning because it's keeping me warm. Highly recommend the hot water bottle. It's such an easy thing to have. I think I got mine on Amazon for like $10 and I love it. And it's just made, again, like winter life feel a lot easier and more pleasant. The next one is not working out first thing in the morning. So I used to be one of those people that would force myself when I get up, immediately put on workout clothes, brush my teeth, and go work out. So that could be walking. Before COVID, I used to run. I think this deserves a spot on the list is I don't run anymore. That has made my life significantly better. I was a big runner in my early 20s. I ran the Boston Marathon. I would run like 4 to 6 miles pretty much every morning at the crack of dawn before work. And I don't run anymore because I didn't like what it was doing to my body. And I discovered walking during the pandemic. And I found that like my body just responded so much better to it. And mentally, I liked it way more. But back to the original point is I don't force myself to be a morning workout person anymore. It's also really helped with my early morning routine and like waking up early because I don't feel existential dread when I get up because I'm not forcing myself to go outside when it's cold. I'm not forcing myself to like lug my brain out of its sleepy state. I'm taking my mornings much more slow and I just go on a walk a little bit later in the morning after work and I do my Pilates at night. Sometimes I do Pilates in the morning depending on like my schedule and the class schedules and stuff, but I would say 90% of the time I am not working out in the morning anymore, and it has made my life and how I feel and how I feel about my day and the way that I take breaks throughout the day so much better. I will say, obviously, because I don't work a typical job, I don't have to be in an office, this routine is a lot easier for me. But I do even feel like if I was going into an office, I would probably still do after work workouts instead of the early morning workouts because it just feels so forced and rushed for me early in the morning. And again, I honestly feel like it makes it harder for me to get up. Like getting up in the morning is a lot easier knowing that I'm not immediately working out. Like I can put on sweats, I can make my coffee and I can sit down and like actually wake up. So yeah, the next one is my espresso machine. So if you've been listening to the podcast, you follow me on Instagram, obviously, you know I'm obsessed with my espresso machine. I got the Breville Barista Express. I've been wanting an espresso machine for a really long time. In the fall, I finally splurged and just bought it. And it changed my life. It makes my coffee obviously so much better. It's helped me ritualize my mornings. I've become a coffee snob. I'm not sorry about it. I love the practice of it. I love the ritual of it. I love that it's become a hobby of mine. And I really love the espresso machine. So if you're a coffee person, elevating your coffee routine, I highly recommend. Next is living alone. So throughout my early 20s, I lived with lots of roommates. My first roommate out of college was a nightmare. And then my next living situation, I lived with three other people. So there was four of us, four girls, one bathroom, all at the expense of paying less rent, which is a sacrifice I feel like you should make in your early 20s. I think that that is something that a lot of people feel like they don't need to do and they don't want to do. Living alone is something that you grow into. And I think social media has made it seem like everybody can just afford to live alone as soon as they graduate college. And that is not the reality, and it's also not normal. I don't recommend living alone, at least until you're 25, if you're able to. Take the time in your early 20s to have roommates and to save. And let living alone be something that you work towards and savor in your later 20s. I feel like I appreciate living alone so much more because I spent so much time having roommates that now I'm like, oh my gosh, I love this. It's made my life so much better, and I can truly appreciate the privilege and how lovely it is to be able to live by myself and have my own space and have it be what I want it to be. I do think, again, I will probably do a whole podcast on living alone and like my roommate journey and all the things I've learned about myself living alone, because I do think too, living alone is like a very unique experience that if you're able to in your life experience a period of time where you can live alone, it is really transformative because you spend so much time by yourself that you learn so much about who you are and how you behave and everything. It's very interesting. The next thing is a shutdown routine. So this is something that I've started doing over the last 2 years. I never used to do this, but it's basically taking a moment at the end of the day, again, like 2 to 5 minutes, to just check everything off of my to-do list and move the things from my to-do list that I didn't get done to the next day's to-do list so that I don't forget about them. It just makes me feel like going into my next day, I'm not waking up wondering, what am I going to do today? I've already sort of thought through my agenda for the day ahead. And again, when it comes down to habits, it just makes getting up a lot easier because you don't have the same like existential dread. So if you are noticing a theme here, a lot of it has to do with like evening and morning routines and things that I've done throughout my day to make getting up and going to bed easier. Because those two periods of time like literally make or break how you show up all day long. And if you don't have a good routine to set yourself up to get restful sleep, to be able to wake up and not dread your day, then your life is basically like a cycle of perpetual misery, which was my life for a long time. And now I figured out the secret sauce and the formula to make sure that that's not how I feel when I open my eyes every day. Next is having a ClassPass membership. So I didn't let myself for the longest period of time in my early 20s. I mean, I joined a gym when I was working in Boston, but once the pandemic hit, I didn't let myself pay for workout classes and pay for a gym because I was like, I've learned to work out at home. It's fine. This past summer, I signed up for ClassPass and I started doing Pilates and I love it. It's worth the money. The reason why I like ClassPass specifically is because you can use it for other things. So like I've found my studios and my instructors that I like and I go to their classes. I sign up for them on ClassPass. But with ClassPass, I can also sign up for other things. So I'm going to try hot yoga. I am going to try going to a sauna. It just makes it easier to try stuff. And honestly, with the ClassPass credits, you can sign up for classes for less money than if you were to buy them. So I know that that probably isn't the best for like studios and stuff, but I mean, workout classes, I feel like, I don't know the financials behind studios and how they operate, but I feel like spending like $30 to $40 for a workout class is totally unreasonable, but that's just my opinion. So ClassPass, I love ClassPass. I feel like though ClassPass only makes sense depending on the city that you're in. Like I've heard that if you're in New York, ClassPass is not as financially savvy because it costs, each class is a lot of credits. But in LA, like my Pilates classes are like 7 to 9 credits. So if it were to cost me $30 to buy the class versus 7 credits to sign up for the class via ClassPass and each credit's $2, it makes way more sense for me to use ClassPass and to pay for the ClassPass subscription. So I really like ClassPass. It's made my workout routine significantly better. And I've learned that I love Pilates and, you know, leaning into Pilates, doing reformer Pilates. I do mat Pilates too, has completely changed my body and my relationship with exercise. So I know a lot of girls say that, but they say it because it's true. So if you are looking for a new workout routine, try Pilates, try walking. The last one on this list is a surprise. It's actually using Notion. So you guys all know I'm a big Google Sheets person. I love Google Sheets. I love Excel. Over the last year and a half, I've started to learn more about Notion, and I really tried to learn how to use it and how to set it up and optimize it for my brain and my workflow. And I feel like I've finally cracked the code on how to use Notion for a way that works for me. It's made me so much more organized. I feel like I can dig deep and keep everything where it needs to be and clean while also being able to expand on it at the same time. That's what I like about Notion, is like it's so layered that you can link and link and link and link and link, and it all stays super connected. So right now in Notion, I used it for all of my business goals. I've used it to plan all of my social strategy, all of my content, all of my monthly plans. I even created weekly plans, weekly to-do lists, weekly calendars. Like, I'm loving it. And I've become like a little bit obsessive over it, so I need to chill. But I've been loving using Notion. So yeah. So that is all of the stuff that has made my life better in my 20s. And with that, we're going to wrap up this episode. I hope you enjoyed. I would love to hear something that made your life better in your 20s. So send me a DM on Don't Depend on Daddy Instagram. If you're not following Don't Depend on Daddy on Instagram, please do. We are growing that page. Thank you to everyone who has. I think in like less than a week, I reached 1,000 followers on there, which is amazing. So thank you so much for the support. And we're going to keep growing. And I'm open to feedback. Send me any feedback you have. Let me know if you've been enjoying these newer episodes, and I will catch you in the next one.